Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of From Complex to Queens, Home Run Applesauce's minor league podcast. My name is Lucas Vlahos. I'm joined by Kenneth Levin and Thomas Henderson this week. How are you guys doing?
Good. Doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm very glad that it finally, I think I probably said this last week because it was cold then, I'm glad that it still feels like winter.
Yeah, it's cold out there.
We actually got some snow in New York. It's a goddamn miracle.
I was honestly shocked that it actually stuck.
It like barely crossed the threshold of stuck. It's like, oh wow, yeah. We got an inch of snow and it was gone in 12 hours. Cool.
Enough that counts.
Mm-hmm. Enough so that the roads are still covered in salty bullshit and like the front of my and everyone else's apartment is covered in like melted salty nonsense all over the floor, but not enough to have like an actual fun amount of snow.
Yeah. The absolute worst outcome. Mm-hmm. for snow.
Very, very, we're being very choosing beggars here, but you know, can we have actual winter, please? No, we can't. Okay. On that note, let's talk about a winter sport, and at the risk of pissing off our favorite former Met, Juan Uribe, promote, extend, trade this week. Go through the remaining teams playing in the NFL playoffs. Who do you want to win? Who do you like still? And who do you just want to lose with the intense hatred of 1,000 Suns?
I want the Lions to win. Because that'll be the most fun, I think.
Mm-hmm. I figured that'd be the popular choice.
Yeah, it's just they have a good vibe, and mm-hmm. I'm a little worried about what it all looks like if Ben Johnson leaves, and they got to pay Goff a lot of money because Goff mm-hmm. has been good with Johnson, but you know, like he's been up and down in his career. So this might be the best chance for them, in the next few years. Like obviously, I don't think they're going to be bad or anything, but. Mm-hmm. They're just losing that level of offensive coordinator is always going to be tough. So if they get it done this year, that'll be fun.
It's a good one. Is there anyone you really want to lose?
Oh, I'm a Steelers fan, so I want the Ravens to lose. Even though like they objectively have a great vibe, and like if Lamar was on any other team, I would love him. But I'm just a little mad at him all the time.
That's fair.
I would so, I would possibly extend them just for the Crustables thing.
Oh, the yeah, what? It's great. What do they eat? Oh, did you not hear about this? They
no, I'm so missing something.
So the strength and conditioning coach, I think it was like, this team eats so many Uncrustables, it's unreal. And like he was like, I can't believe no one got tired of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches all year. But they ate like a ridiculous amount. I can't remember what it was offhand.
That's pretty funny. I, weirdly enough, I have never really liked Uncrustables. I think it's because I'm a peanut butter and jelly sandwich snob, and I think the Uncrustables just taste like sugary bullshit instead of...
They ate 7,500
Uncrustables
this season.
So how many play the football rosters are what, like 70 people? So that's a minimum of 100 per person on average?
It's absolutely nuts how they did that. But also, I wonder if that factors in staff, coaches.
Yeah, that's true.
Front office, it could be eating that many. It's just so funny to me.
You know what's a little surprising, honestly, is that, like, and the players obviously work hard, but the players aren't hanging out in the facility late. They're going to go have a hard practice and do their film work and then go home, I think. Like, the coaches are up out there to, like... And the front office staff are there until forever in the morning. They're the ones who should be pounding the Uncrustables and other junk food, right? You would think.
So when you think about it that way, because you're right, they're going home at like 5, 6-ish, maybe a little later.
Yeah.
How many are they eating in that small time frame? Like, they're putting these away. It's great. It's great stuff.
Think about the size of these people, too. Like, can they just, like... Yeah. Can an offensive lineman just eat an Uncrustable in a single bite? Just, oh, yeah, it's
probably
gone.
It probably makes him more hungry at the end of it. He's like, shit, that even. He's like, I need another one. It just
he's eating them. You eat the Uncrustable. You put a bunch of them in a bowl and you eat them like a bowl of cereal with a big spoon and some milk.
But yeah, that was great. That's a good call, Ken, because that's so funny.
Is that should we take that to mean you are pulling for the Ravens here, Ken?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
Because they also win too frequently, I think.
That's
they
fair.
Win like once a decade.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so.
This is the first time they've ever hosted the AFC Championship, which is crazy.
Which is wild.
Because they're always in it, it feels, or at least around it.
I'm also extending the Lions just because just Detroit needs something nice.
You're telling me the Pistons aren't doing it for
Michigan
them right
now? Michigan in general needs something nice.
Uh-huh.
Well, they just won the national championship. Everyone's chilling.
Yeah, that's true.
Also true. But yeah, I guess the Lions need something nice. I'm going to promote the Chiefs solely because Met legend Patrick Mahomes Jr. Is their...
That's always fair, yeah.
Person, and I'll never forgive the Tampa Bay Bucks for Tom Brady's, you know, late career renaissance. So fuck that.
Renaissance implies that he was bad at some point, which he never really was, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, my hate for Tom Brady is unreal. Uh-huh. Yeah, so for him to win without Belichick was like a knife through my heart. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forgive the greater Tampa Bay area for allowing that to happen.
That's still lucky for you. It's not going to exist in like another 30 years. So you won't have to hold on to this grudge for too much longer.
Also true.
So real quick on the Ravens thing, you said you made the point about the championship game. I read a stat that since the last time the Cowboys went to the NFC Championship, the Ravens didn't exist, and they've gone to like six since then.
Yeah, and won two Super Bowls in that time too.
Yep.
Like insane stuff.
Mm-hmm. As like a tangential tangential Cowboy fan solely through my dad, that was painful to read. So I'm rooting against the Ravens. I absolutely hate the Ravens from my days as a Patriot fan. Patriots also the reason I guess they've never hosted a championship game because it just went through New England every year.
It was New England, Pittsburgh, Denver, surprisingly, because of Peyton in those years. Yeah.
Yep. But I hate the Ravens. I will extend the Lions because of everything you guys already said, but I'm actually going to promote the 49ers. Because I think, despite the fact that they're the number one seed and they win all these games, they actually have good underdog vibes, I think. Both because Brock Purdy is Mr. Irrelevant and deserves more credit than he gets. But also, like, I think it's generally good when generational talent wins championships. And, you know, Kyle Shanahan is perhaps the best offensive mind in the last 30 years, easily one of the best coaches of all time, and I would like him to win a championship. So,
and they he has surprisingly little playoff, like success for how good he actually is as a coach. Because I mean, a lot of that's because it was like Jimmy G, and even Purdy is he's good, but maybe there's a ceiling there we don't know yet because it's weird. Like he's never had like that elite. If he had like an elite quarterback, it'd be over. They'd win like. They lose like two games a year. It would be kind of unfair.
That first year, the year he had Matt Ryan, that's basically what happened. And then, of course, they ran into the Tom Brady buzzsaw, which every quarterback in the last two decades has basically
lost to. Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of weird because to your credit, they're the number one seed, and everyone's like, "Oh, they're really good." But everyone's also kind of like, "Can they actually win the thing?"
Yeah.
Like, because of all that we said. But I think they're probably going to make it out of the NFC now. I think their best chance to lose was yesterday, because of how bad they looked. Really,
really. I mean, I think the Lions kind of faded down the stretch, I guess. So, I mean, the 49ers are far and away the best team left in the NFC picture now. So, we could get a rematch of 49ers Ravens in the Super Bowl, I suppose. I forget what year was or what Super Bowl that was. But okay, that's more than enough football talk. Apologies to the Mets ghost of Juan Uribe. I hope we haven't offended you too much. On to the top 25. So we're going to continue marching through our top 25 here. We're up to number 16. We're going to go through number 16 through 12 this week. So that's catcher Ronald Hernandez at 16, right-hand pitcher Tyler Stewart at 15, another right-hand pitcher Brandon Sproat at 14, shortstop Jeremy Rodriguez at 13, and catcher, in quotation marks, Kevin Parada at 12. So we'll start with Ronald Hernandez. Hernandez was the second piece in the David Robertson deal. The Mets got Marco Vargas, who we'll be talking about later on in the list, obviously. And Hernandez in exchange for a half season of David Robertson, and he promptly collapsed. So that, you know, worked out well for them. He's a catcher. He was signed in. The site decided to stop loading for me right now. 2021 IFA period. $850,000 signing bonus. So he's not a no one. He actually signed for an order of magnitude more money than Marco Vargas, despite being the, you know, lesser of the two prospects at this point. Had a decent debut season in the DSL before coming over and really showing out in the complex league. Very much feels like a guy where the Mets scouts who are seeing the Marlins team in the FCL every single day were like, hey, go get this guy, please. And they did.
I mean, both of them, right?
Yeah, both you would think. I mean, Vargas had some heat, you know, even before the season, I think. Like, he was a little bit, I don't want to say he was widely known, but I think there was some.
Oh, you know, he was more, yeah.
Yeah. Hernandez very much feels like everybody in the Mets scouting section was calling Epler, whoever was actually running the deadline, and saying, if you need a second piece, please ask for this dude. Don't want to take, you know, FCL stats at, you know, face value because shit's weird. But he put up a 150 weighted runs created plus at the complex for Miami and then a 171 with the Mets, walking almost a quarter of his bats in total. He also struck out in a fifth of his bats, which tells you he's probably a little bit too passive. Got promoted up to single A to end the season and wasn't great, but it was an 8-game sample, so it doesn't mean anything. 20-year-old switch hitter, reasonable chance to stick behind the dish. There's a little bit of latent power upside in here, though I don't think he's tapped into it yet, really. Seems like an appropriate ranking, honestly. Like, I don't have any quibbles with where we landed on him, and honestly, a really nice get for a rental reliever as a second piece. So Where are you guys at on Ronald Hernandez? Do you think we nailed this ranking, or are we a little high, we're a little low? Where are you at?
No, I'm pretty comfortable with where we had him.
Me too.
When the Mets first got him, I was like, he could probably sneak into the back end of the top 10. But then they got a lot of other people, and it pushed them down. But that's a good thing. That just means that the system is getting stronger, you know? Because years ago, this dude would be like 5 or 7, you know? Like, so it's just a good thing that the system's getting stronger, that ranking him here is smart. But also, switching and catcher gave me every time. I love that stuff.
When was the last time the Mets had a switch hitting catcher?
Todd Hundley, probably.
I'm just going through the litany of randos we've had behind the plate.
I can't remember anyone, like any backup guy, being a switch hitting catcher. Because Todd Hundley's switch hit, but that's
years. Was ago. Robert Cancel a switch hitter, or was he just lefty?
I think he was just left-handed. That's off the top of my head, so.
I think you're right. Yeah, I can't remember the last time there was a switch hitting catcher. Should also note that, you know, has the very tentative framing metrics we can get for the minor leagues are optimistic on Hernandez. So, you know, there's every reason to think he can stick back there, and there's clearly some latent offensive tools. So, at the same time, young catchers in the low minors can do literally anything.
Yeah, it's such a crapshoot, but there's signs that it's like, oh, maybe he could be like a backup, like a long-term backup catcher for the Mets, maybe even stealing some starts for out. Like, in a perfect world, Alvarez is still around by the time he comes up, and you could DH Alvarez and start him. You know, like, you could kind of get creative with that stuff, but can't have too many catchers.
No.
We see that so often when how many bad catchers are making the majors and playing for a while.
John Sickles coined the term young catcher offensive stagnation syndrome back in 1902, basically, at this point.
And it's still happening.
And it is still a thing. And, like, it happens at every, like, you want to look at a prospect like Diego Cartaya, who is a top 30 prospect a year ago and is now, like, maybe not a top 200 prospect. And this is for the Dodgers, the best development team in baseball. So catching's hard.
Shit happens with catchers.
Mm-hmm. You heard it here first, folks.
Oh, yeah. This is the critical insights we provide. So, again, really nice lottery ticket to grab. But, you know.
Also, that he's already in single A. That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's 19.
You get a lot more eyes on him now. Mm-hmm. Could end the year in double A if it goes well, and then you're looking at majors 2 years from now. You know what I mean? Like, he's actually kind of moving a little quick, which is nice to see.
Look, like, if the hit tool improves and he can be better against off speed and the power comes, he's like a real second division starter. Or he could just never hit and be stuck in double A forever, and I wouldn't be surprised by either of those outcomes or anything in between. Yep. Throw a dart, flip a coin, nobody fucking knows the precision of prospect evaluation for catchers. Okay, let's go on to number 15, and that's right-hand pitcher Tyler Stewart. And weirdly, I think I find Hernandez a more exciting prospect. Stewart might be a bit more of an interesting conversation, though. So he was taken in the 2022 draft in the 6th round out of University of Southern Mississippi. Never a guy that was regarded as having, you know, high octane stuff. More in the mold of, you know, low upside college starter. I don't want to call it a Wilpon pick, right, where they would take a million of these dudes and they'd never amount to anything, but, you know, of that genre of prospect. But Stewart came out and had a better season than I think any of us would have expected this year. Started at Brooklyn as a 23-year-old, so he is old for the level, but posted a 1.55 ERA through his first 75 innings at Brooklyn. Struck out more than a batter per inning, limited walks, limited homers. The FIP is obviously not going to support an ERA of 1.5, but around 3, really solid performance. Went up to Binghamton and wasn't quite as good. Still had a 3.6 ERA, which is solid, but the strikeouts went down to 7.2 per 9. The walks are basically the same, but batters started, you know, actually making better contact, hitting more homers. That was a 7-start sample, 35 innings. He's going to come into this season as a 24-year-old. I don't know that there's a real standout pitch here, right? You know, he's got the starter's frame, so to say, but doesn't really have a standout pitch. It's kind of your very bland fastball, slider, changeup, curveball. There's decent spin on the slider, but it doesn't really have outlier traits in any way that makes it particularly interesting. So we may just be looking at like a low upside org arm here, and I don't know that there's that much to be gained by putting him in the bullpen either. So not really sure what the major league projection is here. Where are you guys at on Stewart? I also should mention he's 6'9" tall, so that's pretty nice.
Yeah, it is nice. With Stewart's funny to me because he feels like people talked about him in the same breath as Christian Scott.
He was better than Christian Scott all season, according to Mets Twitter.
And it's funny because it feels like he's just like here's Christian Scott kind of doing the same things as he's doing. He just does them worse. Like, you know what I mean? Like they're kind of similar, but Scott just has better stuff and he's just better right now as a pitcher. Mm-hmm. And so I think Stewart is going to be one of those guys who is I think I'm a little higher on him than you. I wouldn't call him like org depth. I think he's like a middle reliever, and mm-hmm. that's fine. If Tyler Stewart is like your sixth inning guy, and he's like eating two innings an outing, and it's kind of okay. If he's Drew Smith, I'm perfectly fine with that. It's just you don't need him to be the eighth inning guy. You need him to be like the sixth inning guy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like Drew Smith's issues aren't that he's like terrible. It's that he's overused in high leverage. So if Tyler Stewart's I think that's a totally fine outcome. But I don't know if I see a starter either, because I just don't see the stuff. Like you said, there's no pitch. Like there's not that one pitch where you're like, ah, oh, that's how he's going to get guys out. And mm-hmm. I think in the bullpen, you could kind of have him air it out a little bit more, basically.
Yeah.
For lack of a better way to explain it. But like, and as a starter, he's not going to be able to do that. So. But it's a fine outcome for where do they take him again? What round?
Sixth round, 2022.
Yeah, like if that's a middle reliever, I'm not like, obviously you'd like it to be a little better, but it is what it is. Like it's fine.
Yeah, let's see who they.
You end up meeting these guys anyway.
Yes. If he's even a quad A up and down starter type, that's totally reliable.
Man, he's better than the guy they took in the fifth. Do you guys remember who they took in the fifth that year?
No, who is it?
DeAndre Smith out of USC.
Oh yeah, he's not good. No, unfortunately,
very stupid.
That's a Wilpon pick.
Yes, that's. I mean,
I feel like Tyler Stewart's a little better than a Wilpon pick. Oh yes. But I get what you're saying.
Yes,
it's more like I feel like there's not a ton of like high crazy ceiling upside, but not every guy has that. Some guys are just solid and usable, and I think that's what he could be, which is perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you hope you have a bevy of these guys so that you're not really concerned about sending Steven Nogosek through waivers because you have six other Steven Nogoseks waiting.
Yes.
And maybe that's what Stewart is. I'm a little surprised there's not something more interesting here given the height and lowish arm slot. You'd think that would have some outlier properties that maybe deceive batters a little bit, but I guess not.
I mean, or that's why he has a 1. Whatever ERA instead of what the numbers like. The deception might not show up in the actual stuff that we're watching, but
mm-hmm.
it could show up in the batter's box. It's probably a real pain in the ass. Like facing really tall pitchers suck, and maybe it uplifts his stuff to a hitter in a way that it's hard to see on TV. Like that's mm-hmm. that's super possible also. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'll totally take that if that's the case. But that's also very hard for us sitting here to judge.
Yep.
Let alone it's hard to judge behind home plate as a scout, let alone on MLB TV. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like it's just that's a difficult one to parse, no matter who you're talking to.
I think it's really difficult to eye scout you know, things like VAA or horizontal attack angle without the data. And as stupid as it is, we don't have the data at AA, which is mind-boggling. So, semi-related, but when was the last time the Mets had a pitcher this tall?
John Roush.
How tall was John Roush?
6'11".
He was huge. Were you 6'11"?
Yeah, he was tall, tall.
Jesus Christ, you're not kidding. How tall was Chris Young?
Probably 6'8".
I want to say 6'10".
Let's see which Chris...
Tall? I didn't realize he was that tall.
6'10" is correct. 6'10", good call.
These guys should have been hooping.
You're going to tell me that Chris Young is going to go out and play basketball.
Put him in.
I'm sure he did at one point.
Yeah, both of them absolutely played ball in high school.
Yes. They had the – I mean, this is the problem. This is my always been my problem with, you know, low-level basketball, is that much more than low levels in other sports. Like, oh, I'm 4 inches taller than you. Nothing you can do about it.
I mean, I played D3 volleyball, and I would see the basketball team a lot. And there was one team they were facing. One kid was, like, 7 feet tall. It literally didn't matter what they did. He wasn't even good, but he was just, like, dominant. Because he just stood under the rim, and the tallest kid in our team was like 6'5".
You even see this in like, and obviously they're even bigger. But who is that dude on Purdue last year in the NCAA tournament? And they're just throwing him the ball in the paint every play.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah,
like this guy's 100 pounds heavier than me and 3 inches taller. I can't do anything. So yes, Tyler Stewart is tall, questionable amount of upside, but maybe there's something here to You know, middle relievers are important. You need them. That's why David Stearns has signed like 17 NRIs this offseason so far.
Yes. If he's as good as one of those NRIs, we're all cheering, in my opinion.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay. Now we're on to some, I think, higher upside guys. Maybe that's debatable. But this was – we're going to talk about Brandon Sproat. Brandon Sproat was the Mets' second-round pick in 2023. After being their third round pick in 2022 and not signing.
Hilarious.
If people weren't around, we were doing a broadcast or like a simulcast of the draft over at Baseball Prospectus. And the seven Mets fans on the call all just, you know, collectively they started cackling or putting their heads in their hands going like, what the fuck are we doing here? But yes, the Mets took Sprout a year after taking him and failing to sign him. He's out of Florida where he started alongside Jack Caglione and Hurston Waldrop, both of whom are also going to be, or Waldrop went in the first round and Caglione probably going in the first round next year. 6'3", 210 pounds, 19 games for the Gators as the staff ace there. His ERA was over 4 in his college career, which is not exactly...
That's kind of wild, actually.
Yeah, not exactly encouraging. Allowed in 223 innings, he allowed 202 hits, 99 walks, 242 strikeouts. So based on the surface level results, it's maybe gives you a little bit of pause here. He throws hard, throws mid-90s. He can touch triple digits, but the fastball doesn't really miss bats. He has a slider in the upper 80s with a good amount of spin. He has a good feel for it. That's definitely his best pitch at the time. The changeup is a non-factor, as far as I can tell. He throws a curveball and a cutter as well. On it, I'm not the highest on Brandon Sproat. I think there's an argument to construct for why there might be more optimism, but I'll give you guys the floor first to share your thoughts on this particular draft pick, which is just so Metsian.
I'm curious to see how he does with Jaeger and Stearns.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, I can't believe I'm going to say this and put it out on the internet, but the Mets might actually be good at pitching development.
You so, fool. Like, why did you say it?
But like, it's true though. So what if there's something there that they could unlock, then that's pretty interesting. And also he didn't pitch at all last year. So it's hard to put him anywhere other than where we put him. He just didn't play.
Yeah. I mean, like most college pitchers who get selected, he got shut down for the rest of the season after the draft. It really begs the question what the fuck the Pirates are doing with Paul Skeens, but that's neither.
I don't know why. They absolutely played him to get, like, TV cameras watching. I'm convinced that it was for publicity.
Yeah.
Like, there's no other reason to play him.
Very, very Pirates there. Ken, where are you at on Sprout here?
You know, he's probably a reliever long-term, if anything. The control still needs to be refined quite a bit. That being said, worth the pick solely for the lulls.
Because what if he's just the Mets' Devin Williams? What if he's the Mets'
objectively Jonathan? Fucking hilarious that they chose him after.
How funny would that be if they developed him into like the next great Stearns reliever, and it's a guy that the Mets picked twice and everyone laughed at? Rightfully so. It'd be great.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it seems like they have a type times. For Florida arms now, you know?
So yeah. I think that's the key here, right? And there are a lot of warts with this profile. He's old, didn't miss bats in college, not even a great ERA in college. But we've talked a lot in the context of Mike Vassell about Virginia being shit at pitching development. It's sure starting to look like Florida is also shit at pitching development.
Yeah.
I mean, Hurston Waldrop immediately looked better with the Braves. Christian Scott was a shitty reliever, and the Mets turned him into a top 100 prospect by basically fixing it. Christian Scott now has an 8 fastball, and Florida had him throwing a shitty sinker down in the zone. It's like their pitching philosophy is stuck in 1995. It's so really bad, yeah. I think that's the – I have no insight on whether – Sproat is a good candidate for this, whether this is what the Mets plan to do with him, but it doesn't seem to be an insane reach to think, okay, he has a good slider, he has good velocity, his fastball shape sucks, maybe that last aspect is purely a product of Florida not knowing what they're doing, and the Mets can fix that and have themselves a nice little prospect here.
Yeah. And I think he's in, like, not the worst hands in the league anymore. And with this.
No. I mean, if he was drafted by the Nationals or something, I'd be telling
yeah,
everyone
be over.
To
yeah.
run for the hills. I'm also trying to pull up the draft results to see if there was anyone, obviously, because I forget who I might have wanted them to take.
I remember there being someone on the board that I was like, why did they take Spurt instead? But I can't remember who it is now.
Ben Williamson, Alex Klemny, Drew Hackenberg, Jake Geloff, Alonzo Treadwell. None of these dudes are ringing a bell here. Cole Kurig, I think you had liked at one point.
I think it was him.
Cole Kurig, he went in the comp round B like 20 picks later. Going down to round three, Travis Sikora was a guy who had some interest around the league.
Also, I do find it interesting that the Mets took him twice, mm-hmm. and like it was the same group of people. Mm-hmm. So, like Eric Yeagers is probably like, there's something there. Otherwise, mm-hmm. he doesn't ask for him twice. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
fair.
He would have moved on at that point. And that mm-hmm. doesn't mean anything. Like, the Mets drafted Carlos Cortez twice. That doesn't mean that, like, he didn't end up good. But obviously, there was something philosophically that they saw in him. Whatever mm-hmm. that was, I don't know. But with Sproat, it could be something that they really do think that there's something that Florida was just doing wrong with him. Mm-hmm. And they think that they could fix it. And I wouldn't be surprised if they try. And
if you put Sproat through the same development program you just took Scott through and give him a 7 fastball, he's a top 100 pitching prospect because he's exactly. got the frame and the breaking ball already. Mm-hmm. So,
and you're fine. So maybe that's what they think that they could do. And I would not be surprised if that was the conversation in the room, that we could fix him, basically.
You need the I don't know the character's name from is it Arrested Development? It's like, it's never worked for anyone else, but it might work for us.
Tobias.
Yeah. I've clearly never – this is one of those shows that I've never watched, but I know through the memes, like many other shows.
I feel like you would like it, to be honest with you.
I think I tried to watch
it. It's probably my favorite show of all time.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, just Ken's extremely
Ken's
well
a huge
written.
Fan. Yeah. Ken's a huge fan.
I think I watched the first season – because I remember, like, the banana stand burning down and him saying he has the worst lawyers in prison, a variety of other things. But, yeah, maybe I'll have to give it another. I've got 32 hours of flights coming up. Maybe I'll give it a shot. Okay, so that's Brandon Sproat. Let's move on to Jeremy Rodriguez, who I think might be one of arguably – Jet Williams exists, so he's like the second most exciting prospect in the system for me at this point. Rodriguez
I like that. I want to hear why over Drew Gilbert. So
yes, I mean by exciting, I don't mean best, to be clear.
Yes, just, I know what
like,
you mean.
Interesting to and like he whatever. So Rodriguez was the return in the Tommy Pham deal from the Arizona Diamondbacks. He was a 2022 IFA signing, or no, 2023 IFA signing, because we changed how the windows work. Not an under the radar guy by any means. He got a $1.2 million bonus from Arizona. Then he spent the whole year in the DSL. 256, 371, 393 with 6 doubles, 2 triples, 2 homers, 12 stolen bases in 17 attempts, and most importantly, 21 walks to 26 strikeouts. He then came over to the Mets after the trade, and after coming to the Mets, he hit 422, 536, 711 in 13 games. This is, as in many cases when we talk about prospects like this, and I think Thomas is going to make this point in a moment, we personally don't have the data or necessarily the sources to get to the data. So we hear things like third hand, so to say. But Rodriguez has extraordinarily good batted ball data in the DSL. This is not just a shiny stat line. You should not be scouting DSL stat lines generally, but the contact rates, the damage rates according to his age, the batted ball data itself in terms of spray and launch angle are all extremely good, to the point where he looks like a better version of Marco Vargas relative to where Marco Vargas looked this time last year. This is a potential power hitting and not high end power, but good power, potential good power, good approach, shortstop, and they poached him for a rental of Tommy Pham. So, really exciting prospect. I'm a little shocked that he's this low. Why do you guys think that he wound up down here on our list as opposed to higher up?
I mean, I know why I did it. It's just because I don't feel comfortable ranking someone off of
proximity, you know,
like the information that I personally cannot get. Like the people who tell me this stuff are also the people who I'm sure tell you this stuff, but and I trust them. I know they're not wrong. It's that's not my, you know what I mean? Like I did not procure this information. So it feels a little fraudulent to me. So for me to do it based on someone else's stuff. But like, and then I look stupid and he's like the fifth best prospect in the system next year because he blows up and that's what it is. Fine. I don't really care that much that if that's what that happens, it is what it is. But I'm just not comfortable doing it because I can't look at it myself. But
it's fair.
That's just where I am in the world of ranking prospects. You know what I mean?
It's an extremely fair stance, honestly.
I know he's better than where I ranked him. Like, I know that they're not lying to me. It's just I can't. I
substantiate
can't morally
it.
Do it, I guess. Yeah, like, it's literally like I can't substantiate it myself, so I feel weird doing it.
No, I mean, that's a reasonable argument, honestly. Let's rephrase the question, then, if that's where because I think that's a totally reasonable viewpoint. Where do you think he is on this list when we're doing this podcast next year?
Top 10, probably. That's probably also conservative, but I don't know if they're going to. That also depends if they sell at the deadline and have another good trade-off or if they buy at the deadline and trade more people. Like, we don't really know, but I think he's going to rise a lot. Something I think drastic would have to happen for him not to. The data is just too good from what I understand.
I've been trying to think about who's going to graduate this year. You'd think Gilbert's going to graduate, right?
Maybe Jet. Maybe Acuna.
Yeah. Maybe Scott. Maybe Vassell.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe
Mauricio. We're going to have to.
He would graduate, right? He's on the.
Is he going to graduate on service time? I hope
he
so.
He would be on the IL for a year, right?
Yeah. So hopefully.
They're not going to demote him.
Hopefully Mauricio graduates on service time because Lord knows I don't want to have another year of Ronnie Mauricio discourse.
Especially how difficult post ACL tear if he doesn't play Ronnie Mauricio discourse would be because we just have absolutely no idea what the athleticism looks like.
So presumably he'd be competing with. Let's say that Jet doesn't graduate. Jet, Clifford, Vargas, theoretically Hauk, and maybe whoever they pick in the first round next year, pending the trades, which you alluded to. Feels like top five is almost.
Yeah, it's possible, yeah.
Again.
That also assumes no one else gets better, too. Like,
right, good point. Really good point.
Like, if Ronald Hernandez pops, then he's going to rise above all of this because of proximity to the major leagues and all that. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. I mean, what this should really be driving home is that the Mets, for all of Billy Epler's flaws, and there are many, they did a really excellent job at the trade. Yeah. Like, a mind-bogglingly good job. And not just in the deals where they ate $1 jillion and gave away, you know, big-name pitchers for free. These two marginal deals where they land guys like Hernandez and Rodriguez and again, Marco Vargas, who we'll get to, for rentals is, like, that's really good work.
Shit, I would have been fine with Rodriguez for Robertson alone. Like, Vargas not even withstanding in the trade, you know? That would have been perfectly fine for a pitcher of his age and a reliever and a rental and all that. And you end up getting two, or Hernandez, rather. Hernandez... they end up getting both, and then getting Jeremy Rodriguez for Tommy Pham is insane. Like, that's the biggest green flag of the organization that they've had in quite some time, that they were able to go to another org and identify a highly touted IFA guy that people don't know yet because their metrics said that he's good, that's stuff that used to happen to the Mets. Like, and then get robbed blind half the time. So this it's just nice to be on the other end of that.
This is the shit that the Rays do. And look, the Rays are wrong 60 to 70% of the time, but they do this often enough and they're right 40% of the time. And that's 20 to 30% higher than every other team. So, you know, you get to that regime and you're in a good spot for keeping your system refreshed without having to, you know, draft high or have the biggest bonus pools every year.
Yep.
So, yes, Jeremy Rodriguez, very excited to watch where he lands next season. On to number 12 for a prospect I think we are significantly less excited to watch, and that's Kevin Parada. Parada, obviously their first-round pick in 2022, their first-round pick. He was the pick they got for not signing Kumar Rocker the previous year. Parada was an incredible performer in college. If I recall correctly, he led Division I in homers in his final season as a catcher, whose defense was not elite but was regarded as, you know, fine. Suffice it to say, the major league experience has been significantly worse. He spent most of his year at Brooklyn. This is a 21-year-old top-flight Division I talent from the SEC. That's the kind of hitter who should be absolutely destroying high A, and instead he hit a paltry 265, 340, 447. That's an above-average line on the year. It's a 115 weighted runs created plus, and Brooklyn is not the easiest place to hit. He also did pick things up as the season went on. But again, this is a level that you'd really expect a guy like Kevin Parada to show up and just demolish it, and he didn't. He went on to Double-A for the last 15 games of the year, went right back to being bad. He struck out almost 40% of the time. He was 30% worse than league average as a hitter. The hands are still all over the place. We can talk about the setup in a minute. The bigger problem also is the defensive projection. He's like one of the worst defensive catchers people have ever seen, honestly, if you read the various scouting reports out there. And I honestly, from watching some video, think that's probably accurate. I don't know. Why don't you, you're more qualified to talk about this than me, so I'll give you the floor. Describe his defense and explain what a mess it is.
Well, his arm is real bad. Like, I guess stolen bases matter more now. But he allowed like a ridiculous amount of stolen bases last year. I don't remember what it is, but he's just slow back there. He's not literally if it's involving catching, he's bad at it. Like that's really what it's been. And that just wasn't what he was in college. It's really surprising because it kind of felt like it was he probably might stick at catcher. Like it'll be fine. But he might have to move positions like now. And then if you move positions for him, I don't really know what you put him in, like left field, second base. I don't know. Like,
puts a lot more pressure on the bat, and not be enough bat.
I don't really know what to make of him anymore, to be honest. I don't know. It's just an ugly catching situation. He doesn't block balls well. The framing is poor. I can't call the game calling because I don't know who's doing it. I don't know if the Mets are doing it. I don't know if he's doing it. So I can't speak on that. But it's a problem. Like, it's not good. It's not major league quality. Like, that's really just what it is. And obviously he's in the minors, so it doesn't have to be right now. But, like, we were talking about with Ronald Hernandez, like, we don't have these issues. We don't have these worries with him. But it's like year two of the Parada experience, or three, I guess. Like in that area, and we're talking about moving him to fucking left field. Like that's a disaster outcome. If you said that when they drafted him, that we're already talking about that, it's wild.
I believe the Mets announced like last week or so, a couple days ago, that they plan to keep him at catcher in the short term.
But that's bad it is. That David Stearns is going to it was Will Salmon who said it, so The Athletic, that he's going to The Athletic and being like, no, he's going to be the – like, are you – Like, that's how bad that the Mets know that they have to actually publicly say it. Also, it's apparently he allowed 137 stolen bases last
Jesus
year.
Jesus Christ.
Which is like, what? Like, how do you even function as a catcher that way?
130 what?
137.
He played 105 if you count his brief time in St. Lucie. 105 games.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's like, what? Good Lord. I mean, I've heard a couple people suggest he doesn't have to go to left field necessarily. Maybe he works at third or something. Who the hell knows? I buy everything you've said about the defense, frankly. But I also kind of believe that our ability to project defense in the minors is...
It's very hard, yeah.
Close to, right. We see bad defenders improve drastically. We see good defenders fall off a cliff. What troubles me a lot more is the offense, and especially that hand setup. For those of you who haven't watched Kevin Parada, he like dangles the bat behind his back almost. Like when it's at its most extreme, he's almost pointing the head of the bat at the ground straight down behind his back. And then he has to uncoil all that to actually swing. And it's one thing to do that in college where, yeah, you've got quick wrists and nobody's throwing that hard and the breaking stuff is not that good. You can take a beat longer to, you know, have to pull the trigger. How have the Mets not cleaned this up already? It's insane to me that he's been in the system for a year and his swing still looks this bad, and also begs the question of what are they having him work on? Because his defense is awful, and the offense, the problematic aspects, mechanical aspects of his swing haven't been addressed. So are we just not giving him any instruction and letting him fuck around and figure it out? I don't get it.
I think they were trying to let him figure it out on his own. Or not figure it out on his own, rather. See if he could do it first before you want to drastically change this guy's whole approach. But also,
there have been videos that I've seen where he's not doing it, you know, as much. So, I don't know. They had the issue with Travis d'Arnaud was always that he was a bit of a tinkerer. Mm-hmm. And would, you know, fall back on, you know, the high risk setup that he was comfortable with when things weren't going particularly well. Maybe it's something like that, but whatever it is. No bueno.
It's something that I understand why you want to allow him to figure to keep it going, because comfort level is important at the plate. But at some point, you got to be like, dude, it's not going to work. Like, you can't hit double A pitching or single A or high A pitching. When you face major league star here, Spencer Strider here, it's over for you. Like, you're going to strike out on three pitch. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they just need to be real with at this point. And I think if they're going to actually plan on doing anything with him, they're going to have to change it. Maybe they are changing it and he's just stubborn and it's hard for him, or it's just difficult in general for him to lose the muscle memory. Who knows? But It's hard to know what's actually going on behind the scenes. But yeah,
I feel like we had this same conversation with Alex Ramirez though, right? Where
we did
obvious mechanical his are less egregious than Parada's, to be clear. But it's like, you have a mechanical flaw in your swing. You've had it for some time. It's clearly affecting your performance. And I feel like there needs to be stronger pushback on a guy who wants to stick with something that is very obviously not working. Again, I've never been a coach. I'm sure this is a lot more complicated than I'm making it out to be, but when there's something so obviously inefficient and it's so obviously affecting things, you got to change something.
Yeah, you do.
Never hear also, about this. Go ahead.
Even if you don't think he's around long term, then you do that to trade him in a year or whatever.
Yeah. So I don't know.
I get keeping him behind the plate, though, I would say. I understand why you want to keep him behind the plate as long as possible. Because mm-hmm. if you move him to left field, then you're not ranking. Okay, so perfect example. He's 12 in the system, right?
Mm.
If he was not a catcher and a left fielder with this stat line, is he even on the top 25? Because
I mean, probably it gets like, pretty thin towards the end.
Okay, so top 20 then, or maybe even top 15.
He's not in the top 15, no.
Exactly. Because like like Ken said, the bat needs to carry. So you keep him a catcher because the bar is so low for offense.
He would be – we'd be 19? Ranking – yeah, maybe. But we'd be ranking him solely on pedigree. Yeah. Right, like if you walked in and you didn't know anything, and someone said scout this player, you'd have a guy with an older play, not old because he's only 21, but older, not performing at a particularly high level, without particularly strong underlying traits, and effectively no defensive utility. That's not a top 25 prospect in a vacuum, but the college pedigree does matter, right? Like there, it means something. It's a prior on what you're seeing, and we're not wrong to weigh that to some extent still. But if he has another season like this, you get to the point where that college data means nothing anymore. It's like what you're doing clearly doesn't work with wood bats and against real pitching. So I think I agree with you about keeping him behind the plate until it gets to the point where you're confident that that decision is affecting the offense. Like ultimately his ability to hit is what's going to make or break him as a player. And if you're at a point where the rigors of catching or the stresses of trying to improve there are preventing him from making the necessary changes offensively, you probably move him, but I generally agree to keep him there for now.
And the Brewers, one of the things they did do well is get catchers to catch better. Like,
very good point.
Wilson Contreras was a better catcher after he went there. William, yes. I always mess that up, but yes, William. William was a better catcher once he got traded there, defensively. Mm-hmm. Omar Narvaez was a disaster before he got to Milwaukee, and then when he was a Brewer, he was a good catcher.
He was like best framer in baseball for a year after going to Milwaukee.
Exactly. So there's something that Stearns and his group of people know of. Like there's some type of development that they clearly have done and figured out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's proof in Milwaukee. So maybe that they could do that with him. And maybe that's why they're also sticking with him back there to see if they could keep him behind the plate with their ability to do that with other guys. Cause I mean, with William Contreras and Omar Narvaez, they were bad in the majors. Like, Omar Narvaez was in Milwaukee in Seattle and was bad as a catcher, you know? So like that's even, in my opinion, more difficult because he got all the way to the majors with that, with that attitude. So, and that ability. So it's even to get gains at that level in the major leagues and with an older player like Narvaez, he was in the league for a few years. So I don't know. That's also interesting to me and something that I thought about with Parada.
I mean, to that
clearly
point,
something there.
To that point, does that suggest that the catcher defense aspect of this is easier to fix than the?
Mm-hmm. It might be.
Yeah, like
because if he can't go in the box and actually fix what he, because Ken was right when he said that. Like, there's some videos where he doesn't do it and he looks fine.
Looks better. And then, it looks better.
And then next game he'll go out and he'll do the same shit again and it's off and he goes 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts and it's like, well, you just went 2-for-3 with 2 doubles yesterday doing something else. So I don't know what's going on.
Because I think you watch him and there's – I don't have a great eye for this. I don't think. But to my eye, there is objectively good bat speed here. He just has such a wonky setup that it
– takes too long.
Yeah, it takes too long to load. You are not Gary Sheffield. I'm sorry. You were Gary Sheffield in college.
And but like, not – if someone tries to be Gary Sheffield today, every team is being like, "Dude, stopping that right now."
Cut it the fuck. Also, Gary Sheffield had like 90 grade bat speed. So yeah, he can get away with waggling his hands around. It doesn't fucking matter. He's also pointed out to the tits, but that's So I'm both extremely down on Parada and also see the reason for optimism. And I steal a lot of things from Jarrett because I talk to Jarrett a lot, but he always refers to this football anecdote of, you know, do you choose two runners who run the same speed? Do you choose the one with good mechanics or bad mechanics? Choose the one with bad mechanics because you can fix the bad mechanics.
Well, you can make it, yeah. You can make
There's
it.
There's a very obvious bad mechanic here to fix. So
yeah,
that's,
I'm down on him, but not ready to give up on him, I think is the way, the best way that I can put it. Because I think it's too early, straight up.
Yep. Agreed. Okay, so those were our five for this week. We'll have another five next week, presumably, five or six. And then by that point, we'll be inching into the very tippy top of the list and the real top 100 guys, which will be exciting. Okay. So we'll wrap up here. Thanks again for listening to another episode of From Complex to Queens. We are a Patreon-based podcast now, so if you are interested, you can go to the Patreon. You get access to bonus episodes and also help directly support our podcast and all those other ones in the Home Run Applesauce Network. If you have questions, comments, or concerns, or football picks, you can email the show at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. And I'm just now realizing that I again forgot to get the password from Steve. So if you sent questions in, we'll do them next week, I promise. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm not at Steve Stipa. I'm at ElvLajos343. Steve is at Steve Stipa. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SadMetsSCN. Until next week, love the Mets. Love the Mets. Oh,